how did this whole project come to be?
Well, it came to be because of the Engineering Research Center that was started 8 years ago, the goal of which was to come up with new manufacturing methods for pharma. That really, pure and simple, is the way it was to go. And there were several different sort of ideas that were put forward. We call them test beds, and this is one of the test beds. Okay. And the motivation for this particular test bed is that a lot of the modern drugs are very powerful, so they're given in very small doses. So if you think about making a tablet, that means you got a teeny-weeny little tablet, and it's pretty hard to break it apart. So in order to produce that kind of dosage form, conventional manufacturing methods are not very, very good at it. They can give you very precise drug loading. So that's one driver. The second driver is a lot of medicines have big interpatient variability. So what's good for you is not the same as good for Arun or good for me. And so then you're faced with this problem. There's variability. We need to have different sort of doses for different folks. So how do you do that in an industry that's used to running processes where you make billions of the same tablets and distribute them globally? And so part of the idea here was a simple way where you could make exactly what that patient needs at the time they need it in small amounts. But the big push is precision. Okay, you got to get exactly the right amount. And in addition to exactly the right amount, you also need to get it in the right sort of chemical state, because it can influence how the drug dissolves in the body. And how the drug dissolves in the body will influence how much gets into your bloodstream and on down to the appropriate organ.
So that's a little bit putting the cart before the horse, because one of the things you have to figure out, I think, first of all, right, is how do you know what I need versus what you need versus what my 2.5-year-old daughter needs? Don't you need to have some sort of diagnostic to determine that?
Mm-hmm. So that was a planted question, whether you knew it or not. Definitely the prediction part is very important. And in a separate project, we've had, in collaboration with some colleagues in pharmacy, we've been doing that. That is, we've been trying to show that you could use clinical trial data plus to build a model that represents how a patient population responds to a drug. And then we show that with that population model and a minimum amount of data from you, we could then turn that around and turn that model into a model for you, and then use the model for you to predict exactly what you need.
So let me ask you then,
it needs two pieces. It needs a model, it's called a pharmacodynamic model, of how the general patient population responds. And typically in the current environment, pharmaceutical companies get that data. That's part of the clinical trial data. But what they do is they use that data to determine sort of a recommended dosage for the whole population. So that's great. It gives you, the average. But then if the variance is very large, you know, not everyone will get what they want. So we're trying to use that kind of population data, build a model, a math model, you can compute it with it, and then measure a minimum amount of things about you to personalize that model. That's basic. And we've published now a couple of papers. So these two technologies really fit together. You got to be able to predict, and you got to deliver what the patient needs.
So let me ask, when you're taking that modeling data, are you, if you were building a drug for me, would you say, all right, you're a 33-year-old white male, and therefore we know that about you? Or do you need to know more deep genetic information about me? Or do you need to have other sorts of markers that say, Stan is different from the average 33-year-old white male in this way, and therefore we must construct the drug slightly differently, and here's how?
Yeah, there's really two levels of it. There is kind of what I call the macro level, which is what the omics kind of information gives you. Omics kind of information allows sort of grouping of populations into pools. And this is typical, probably the best example is cancer treatment, where you can, there's a number of different treatments that could be suggested. You use that information to say, you know, you're a member of this pool and this drug is likely to work best for you. We're not dealing with that aspect, but what we're saying is once the physician said this is the drug we're going to use, then what we want to do is to figure out exactly how it should be administered, how much, how frequently, you know, that. So the two things sort of fit together. I think you really need both. And currently, of course, physicians address this personalization problem or individualization problem essentially by trial and error. I mean, you start out, gives you the recommended dosage on the label, and then you come back a while later and say, well, it didn't really help, so okay, let's crank it up and see what happens. Or I had a bad reaction to it, so let's crank it down and see. So that's... And that's really about the best thing you can do is actually trial and error until you zero in on what seems to work, and then you go with it. What we're trying to do is to eliminate that entire trial and error process, particularly for therapies where it really matters. I mean, if you're treating a certain form of cancer, you want to zero in on the right treatment as quickly as possible. You don't want to spend time over or underdosing the patient until you finally figured out what works for them. So another area that we really haven't gone into yet, but we're in discussions with some clinical people, is pediatric medicine, you know, for children. It's really, really tricky to administer drugs to children because typically the drug was tested on adults. And now the pediatrician's got to figure out what's a reasonable way of scaling that down. And so they use a lot of their experience. They, you know, the profession trades information. There's some attempts to, for example, one of the ways of adjusting is to instead of an expected dose of so many milligrams of tablet six times or every 6 hours, that dosage might be normalized. So many milligrams per kilogram of body weight. So it's kind of in chemical engineering, we call that a linear scale-up. You know, if you're twice as big, we give you twice as much. Unfortunately, the human body typically doesn't scale linearly, you know. Even though we may have the same, you know, height and weight, our metabolic systems could respond differently. So a linear scale-up is a good first step, but it's not all the way there.
You mentioned the time aspect. I wondered about clinical trials. Would this type of technology potentially help speed up clinical trials? Would it help you get results for different groups of people faster so that, you know, you have medications that are developed more quickly and hopefully, if you're a drug company, much more cheaply potentially?
Potentially it's there. It's a question of how do you get this kind of technology into the whole drug development pipeline quickly. It seemed to us that working with a clinician who has to make a decision on what to administer is a good way to start. And then when that physician community starts saying, oh, this is really helpful, then hopefully one can get the drug developers to say, well, let's move it down the pipeline into our part. Certainly, I think it's a. It always seemed to me that if you could run a clinical trial, and every patient that you gave it to, you could adjust the amount you gave to him to that person, the chances are you'd have better success in showing that the drug works. I think a lot of times, the trial shows a big variability. And if the variance is big, then sometimes it's difficult to convince the regulatory body that your drug is really all that better because there's such a big variance band around. Buried in that variance band, it may well be that for some people this is really going to be much better than what already exists. But it's hard to show statistically. You know?
I wondered about the idea of competition, too. You've got a number of drug companies, but primarily you've got, what, a couple, three, four, maybe five, who are your giant drug producers. Mm-hmm. And I wondered about researchers or people who are interested in starting pharmaceutical companies, if this technology is available to them, does it allow them to potentially get competing products to market and thus push the pharmaceutical industry ahead in terms of treating patients faster because they don't have to do it on the billions of tablets scale, but they can do it with extreme precision?
Mm-hmm. No, I think it has that potential. You know, I think what you're suggesting is that one can approach it from the patient end, you know, administered to a specific patient, administered from, you know, the early clinical trials end, but then work it towards the middle. And it certainly is possible. It certainly is one way we've thought about changing the sort of the drug supply chain where you have lots of distributed manufacturing facilities around the country that make stuff that would get around some of the shelf life problems, because now basically every drug has a shelf life because in time it does degrade and lose some of its effectiveness. Now, if the supply chain is complicated, you know, you're making something in Singapore and you got to distribute it to the rest of the world, there's a lot of time delay, and you hear lots of stories about drugs showing up in pharmacies in less developed countries, and they're essentially already exceeded their shelf life limit. You know, but it just took that long to get there. The supply chain is so complex. So one of the ways to address supply chain long delays is, can you do it in this distributed fashion fairly cheaply? You know, and so that's certainly an idea.
Let me ask you this question then. Is it possible that with technology like this, rather than the pharmaceutical companies printing the drugs themselves, billions at a time, that they could maybe hang on to a patent for it, but they could say, all right, here, Walgreens and CVS, when Rex comes in and he needs a prescription for this drug that we own the patent on, we're going to give you the right to print him the 60 tablets he needs rather than having to print the other billion that are going to sit on a shelf somewhere.
Exactly. Now, that sort of, you know, it's deja vu all over again, because it's sort of gets the pharmacy back to the compounding pharmacist model that used to exist 100 years ago, where you came in with a prescription for your physician and they literally wrote what's supposed to be in that medicine or that syrup, and they mixed it up for you. It's somewhat like that. I think the difference here is that, you know, if with the kind of automation that Arun and the PhD students have been working on, you'd like to make this as push button sort of driven as possible. You just on the computer dial in the recipe and the dosage and push a button and it's done. So there's no errors in measuring or getting the wrong ingredients. And I think that's very important in order to assure, you know, patients and physicians, they're getting what they want. But it's certainly one way of impacting the marketplace would be to have essentially your drug production rig in a pharmacy is run by a pharmacist. And then what the drug company would supply is, like in the case of one of the examples Arun may have been talking about, where essentially the formulation is a mixture of an edible polymer and the drug. So that mixture, the Lilly could distribute in bulk, and then all we really would need to do is just to put it in this rig. So we've been, for example, talking about, could you just, produce a thin rod, a filament, that's this polymer and drug, and you just stick it in this rig. Enough of it is melted to deposit on certain tablets, and when you don't need it, you take that rod and you put it back on the shelf.
Like a soldering iron for drugs.
Yeah, exactly. But the idea, the quality control on the formulation then would come from the major pharmacy company who would produce that and then have distributed to the individual pharmacy. So we were, in order to get that process going, that's why we were thinking of or have been discussing with colleagues in medical clinics about, you know, putting a device like that in their clinic, and because then they would, or we would help them, but it'd be right on site where that would be produced, so there's no, you know, confusion about where they get it and how it's done. because quality control is really essential. That's really, really important.
So that leads me to my next question, which is, of course, the big one. You know, you've done six incarnations of this or thereabouts, and I think the average person listening to this might wonder, and how long will it be before my pharmacist has one of these in his office and can say, aha, I need 30 tablets of that, no problem, let me go have the machine chunk away on that right now?
Well, I think all of the technical components have been assembled and work. So that's been our job, is to show technical feasibility. What needs to be done is we need a good, competent medical device company who would engineer this into a production model. And really, from a cost point of view, I think, everyone correct me if I'm wrong, but probably all the components you could put together for $50,000 or less. And so if you could, you know, and you could put this collection of rig into something that has the footprint of a laser printer. So it's not, you know, way out technology. All of the pieces exist.
And of course, you've got a ton of medical device makers here within, 200 miles within the state.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and so that's now that we've you know, demonstrated reasonably well with solutions and melts, we're starting a campaign to show deposition onto tablets. So essentially, placebo tablets. So particularly when the dosage isn't very large, you could just deposit a small amount on this placebo tablet, coat it, and you're done. So we're just getting up to demonstrate that part. And for many farmers, that might be the easiest way to go, because you just have a supply of these standard tablets, and they're all the same. And the only thing that differs is which drug you deposit on it, and maybe you would put a dye or something into the coating so that the patient wouldn't get confused. You know, a lot of people differentiate their medicine by feel and color. So simple things like that need to be worked out, but it's all within the realm of, you know, technical feasibility. I know there's no really gaps in technology I can see, really.
All right. That's great. That's what I had.